Hi everyone, I'm Stephen Humphreys. I'm the CEO of Clover Risk Funding and the host of the In Clover podcast. At Clover Risk Funding, we do things differently. If you had told me a long time ago I'd be doing a podcast about litigation funding, I would have told you you were dreaming, but here we are. At Clover, we operate on the basis that we provide experience with an edge, and we do that by working to four pillars: adverse cost funding, seed cost funding, claims funding, and claims consulting. We're going to talk about all of those four pillars today. Joining me to do that is insolvency doyen Neil Cousin. Thank you for joining me, Neil.
Thanks, Stephen. I'm glad to be here. Great opportunity.
Now, keeping with how we do things differently at Clover, today Neil's going to ask the questions and I'm going to answer them. So let's get into it.
And can I say the top of this podcast, congratulations on your new fund. After 2 decades of experience in commerce and legal and funding, you know, you get to run your own race. Well done.
Thank you. It's really exciting. I think with what we've put together and how we're focused on doing things differently, it's a really exciting time to be involved in litigation funding. It's a really exciting time to be involved in the insolvency industry. And I'm really excited to get the hands a little bit dirty and work closely with insolvency practitioners to progress their claims.
Yeah, look, and as an insolvency practitioner, you know, I'm excited about a new fund, new opportunities, and one that can source a better product for the insolvency profession. So I'd probably like to talk with you about Clover and understand the four pillars that underpin Clover. So perhaps you could, let's talk about the first one, just the litigation funding side of it.
Sure. I think litigation funding is really interesting. It's an industry that has only been around in Australia for 35 years. Some people will tell you it's earlier. It's not. And it's an industry that really has had the benefit of a captured market. There's only been 4 or 5 traditional private litigation funders. There are a couple of government funders who play in the funding space. I had the privilege of being in one of the public funders for the last 6 years before moving back to the private world. And what we see in claims funding is, and what we intend to do in claims funding is, provide genuine support to liquidators to fund their claims. And the word genuine there is important. We are not going to be a funder that imposes arbitrary caps on claim value, arbitrary caps on funding budgets. And our approach is going to be different in the sense that we will evaluate each claim on its merits and we'll provide funding accordingly. Now, that sounds simple, but we will not operate as though a claim is just a line on a spreadsheet and it's a simple arithmetical task to work out whether or not you fund. Funding in liquidations fundamentally relies upon 3 things: how good is the team, how good is the claim, and how good are the prospects. How good is the team? Well, we, with our 70 plus years of experience in the insolvency industry, we know what a good team is. We know what a good lawyer team is. We know what a good liquidator team is, and we know who the good counsel are. So that's going to be an easy part of the claims funding decision. The claim type, insolvency claims, they're not easy claims to run. The work that insolvency practitioners do is hard work. However, once you get through the point of working out what the claim is, you can very easily, in my view, determine the strength of potential defences because they're all the same, or they're virtually the same. So the prospects and the type of claim are really aligned, and they're the things that we're going to look quite closely at. I said earlier we're not going to impose an arbitrary cap on quantum as well as on funding budget. To be honest, we want to play where 90% of the liquidation claims are, which is sub 10 million. That's a market where not a lot of practitioners get, to be colloquial, love from funding from litigation funders. And we absolutely want to play there. And we want to work with practitioners whose whole practice sit in that sub 10 million claim pocket to progress funding and to work on their claims.
And what's important to the insolvency profession is, particularly those liquidation claims, is the security for costs,
yep.
Adverse costs, insurance. There's only a limited market in Australia. Usually we're heading off to London to try to get that type of insurance. How does Clover play differently there?
The adverse cost funding is a pillar that I'll talk about a little bit later, but in the context of funding a global claim, we certainly will look at packaging, not only putting money into the hands of the liquidator to fund things like legal fees and counsel's fees, but we will leverage our balance sheet into placing adverse cost indemnity funding and security for cost funding as part of a package in a claims fund. So we will play differently there because we are the holder of the strings. We will give practitioners a fixing of what the fee is before we get out, before we start. We won't be asked to be paid at the beginning, or you won't be required to pay a premium during the life of the claim. It will be an outcome-driven fee that will be charged by us. So we will be quite different in the sense that we're not looking for things like a 6-monthly premium. We won't require you to go to an insurer in London to insure a claim in the District Court of New South Wales, for example. It will be coming from us. And we will assess the value of an adverse cost indemnity, again, based upon our experience and by talking directly to your lawyers. Similarly, you know, there's always that limitation on how much adverse cost do you need. We, with our experience in the insolvency industry, we've both seen, I think, adverse costs being capped at levels that are so low as to render the provision of the adverse cost moot. We won't be doing that. We'll be very much focused on what is the right level of adverse cost coverage to be provided, and then how do we very much focused on the creditor pool, what sort of recovery needs to be made to make sure there's a flow through of money to all relevant stakeholders to really bespoke a deal around that.
Yeah, it's a good message that no premium unless success. So, yeah. You know, that's a different product than currently here now.
It's a very different product. I don't think in all of my time involved in litigation, and, you know, I think I first started in the insolvency industry in 1997, there's been many products out there, but the way in which we intend to assess the product, coupled with the way in which we intend to receive payment is quite unique to the market. And I guess that's why we're at Clover, we're bringing it to the market because it is unique and it's filling a gap that very much practitioners, and again, in that sub 10 million claim space where they just can't get that level of support.
So I'd like to touch on the third pillar of Clover,
yep.
Which is seed funding.
Yep.
I mean, it's important for the insolvency profession to investigate.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of companies don't have the funding to do that. So it's important for liquidators to get a level of funding to enable those investigations to get the next tier of recovery for the creditors, which is all important. Tell me how Clover plays in that space.
I think it's if you live on the outside of the insolvency industry looking in, all you hear is insolvency practitioners have a lot of money and they don't do enough for creditors. Those of us inside the insolvency industry know that the first part of that's not true. And the second part of that is that practitioners every day are doing work for free to come up with or to find the truth of what happened. Practitioners necessarily need support, whether that's monetary support, whether that's, again, adverse cost support, or whether that's just by being a sounding board in the development of their investigations, in the development of undertaking public examinations. Public examinations, to me, are the most underutilized tool in the liquidator's toolkit. And they're not used because they cost money. You can draw a straight line between the lack of usage of public examinations and the cost of money. Now, there will be insolvency practitioners listening to this who will be saying, he doesn't know what he's talking about. I do public examinations all the time. And you absolutely do. However, wouldn't your public examination be better with some money in your pocket to pay lawyers to really closely work with you to investigate the affairs rather than relying upon speculative work, which, again, the lawyers in our industry do speculative work fantastically well, but I'm sure they'd love to have money in their pocket to be able to do those things too. So at Clover, we are very focused on assisting practitioners and placing money where money is needed. And to do that, we will fund in those seed funding areas. So undertaking more detailed investigations. What does that mean? Well, that can mean undertaking a bank tracing exercise, for example. It can mean for the smaller firms that don't necessarily have a forensic computing operation, assisting with the extraction of emails from a server and the analysis of them. Some funding to help the smaller practitioner engage in that space. I've already said I think public examinations are vital. Well, providing funding for the whole process of a public examination, including the document review, including what should go into a summons, and including what can often hamstring a public examination, which is a call for costs from the recipients of examination summonses to produce their documents or to attend. We will assist with funding in that area. I don't think we've mentioned so far the fact that we would also assist practitioners in attending to court to get freezing orders. We're recording this in August 2023. We've already supported a practitioner do that, and worked with the practitioner and the practitioner's lawyers to come up with a funding model that allowed them to go to court very early in a job where they knew that there was something that was there. They knew that there was an asset. They knew that there was a potentially, and they also knew that there was the potential for an asset to dissipate. And they asked us for help because these sorts of applications necessarily need counsel support and sometimes senior counsel support. So we came up with an approach with the liquidator, the liquidator's lawyers and counsel, whereby we could go to court and get not only the summonses for a public examination, but having got them, also get freezing orders under 1323 of the Corporations Act to restrain the assets that might be the subject of the investigation being used. That obviously has an end game effect for us as a funder, because we want to make sure that there's an asset at the end of the rainbow. Yeah. It also means, though, that the practitioner can go away and undertake the investigation with a reduction of the fear that there's going to be no pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
But I think that's all important for firming up the insolvency claim. I
mean, absolutely.
It's just such a good process. In relation to claims management, I've been working with you on and off for 20 years, so I know it's a bit of a passion of yours. Mm-hmm. How the fourth pillar of Clover, claims management, how are you going to make a difference there?
I think at Clover we do bring a uniquely different set of skills, in the sense that I've been an insolvency lawyer, I've been an insolvency accountant, I've been a forensic accountant, I've been inside government. Neil, you're involved with Clover, obviously, and you've been doing this for a very long time as well. I think when you've looked at as many cases as we've looked at, you get a good feel for not only the prospects of a case and not only how a case might get to an end game, but very much around how a case can be run to maximise the return. It's one of the things that I regularly said during my time in the Commonwealth as CIO of the FEG Fund, that probably 50% of the applications that came to us that we ultimately funded were changed during the course of the funding process. Yeah. Because one of the things that we did a lot of was we sat with the practitioner and said, let's talk about what you've got. At the very early stage, the pre-funding stage, let's talk about what you've got. Let's talk about the whole ball game when it comes to your liquidation. Mm. Anyone in insolvency knows that there are probably 6 to 7 different types of claims that might arise in every insolvency administration, right from debt collection right through to claims against auditors or other advisors who haven't done a great job. So within that realm of case types, the same fact evidence basically leads you down a path of each of them. And quite often as a funder, what you receive is, I've got an insolvent trading claim. Let's do that. Rather than thinking about all of the other things that sit within the administration and all the other things that are particularly available. So the first part of claims consulting, and really an overarching tenet of all of the pillars, is early involvement with a practitioner to work out what they've got, to work out with them what they've got and what could be the best path to a potential claim, what could be the best path to a potential recovery.
Yeah, I actually agree with that, because as a practitioner, I think our profession are not getting funders in during the administration process when the information's a little bit raw. Where can we go with this? Particularly, it's really important when we're putting our reports out to creditors on claims and where they might go and what the value of those are. So I think it's really important to get Clover and others involved early in the administration process.
I very regularly used to say, I don't want to be your first call or your second call in a new appointment, but why isn't a funder, whether it's me or other people, your third, fourth or fifth call? Because insolvency administrations are chronically underfunded. You're going to know as a practitioner, if not day one, then certainly by the end of the first week, how much cash you've got at the bank.
Yep.
So you're going to know what you're going to be able to deploy. Certainly at Clover, I would much rather be involved in the first month of a liquidation. I would much rather be involved in an administration before the practitioner writes the 439A report, to talk to them about what they might have, to talk to them about what we might be able to offer. We might not provide a single dollar of funding in the first 6 months of that liquidation, for example, while the practitioner is doing everything that she or he is statutorily required to do. But the fact that a conversation's been started, the fact that we've had a meeting where we've talked about, well, this is what I think I've got at a high level early, these are the development paths that we're going to go down. We as a funder can certainly start thinking about how we might best deploy money into the job. And we can say to the liquidator and the liquidator's lawyers, if they're appointed at that point, this is where we would think you should specifically look. And obviously, if the liquidator doesn't have an incumbent lawyer, we can talk to them about lawyer choice. So that early involvement, I think, is really important. Administration, being involved in the voluntary administration process, I think that's a really prescient point that you make. I think there's a real opportunity for voluntary administrators and funders to get together during a voluntary administration, talk about what's in the voluntary administration, talk about what potential claims might arise if the company goes into liquidation, and as part of an assessment in the 439A report, given that the voluntary administrator has to make a recommendation, involving a funder and getting a very early high-level view from a funder has to be a good thing. What's also interesting is there are, particularly given the clearly large amount of failures we're going to have in the construction industry, it's already taking up more than 40% of the ASIC of the ASIC register at the moment for appointments.
Yeah, I think it's about 30 to 50% of what we see.
Yep.
Right
it,
now.
It's going to get higher. Well, there's a whole claim type that you can only do in administrations, and they're the security of payment type claims. They can only be done in a voluntary administration because of the way those acts are structured, and because it would seem on the basis of a Victorian Court of Appeal decision. So if you're in a construction voluntary administration, a way to bring money into that voluntary administration and potentially again impact on the outcomes under 439A and under that assessment could be getting some funding to run those super claims, getting some funding to enforce adjudications. That can all be done in a voluntary administration period. So in the claims consulting space, and an overarching ideology across all the pillars is early involvement. As I said, I don't think you're the first or second phone call, but I think early engagement, early conversations is really important. And we've already seen that. We've seen that since we've been going at Clover. We've had a number of conversations with practitioners in the first month to six weeks of their job to start talking about, well, this is the path that we think we need to go along to get to a point where we funded something with you. And this is where we would look based upon our experience. sometimes that can also lead to conversations around different claims. I'll always remember talking to a practitioner one day about an insolvent trading claim and talking a lot about, you know, the indicia of insolvency. And then we got to the end of that conversation, the practitioner said, you know, almost offhandedly, oh, and you know, they paid out a big dividend. And I said, oh, have you done an assessment of what the position was at the time that they paid that dividend out? Because obviously there's a section of the Corporations Act that tells you what directors must look at when they pay out a dividend. There was no secret science in that. I just happened to have been looking at a case like that the week before. And that led to a whole different path of recovery, because the liquidator went back and looked at what the impact of that dividend was, what the cash reserves at the time of the dividend existed, and indeed saw that a loan came in to pay the dividend, which you can't do. And that led to a completely different optic of how a recovery was going to occur. So that's, again, that leverage of experience. But it also meant that the liquidator saved some time, because the liquidator was able to go, well, we're going to go down that path. You don't have to prove insolvency to get that claim up. That has a lead-on effect to the impact of an insurance policy, for example. So just being able to be involved in those conversations and come up with the different type of claim theories is, I think, essential to what we do.
So the four pillars that we've talked about: funding, adverse costs, seed funding as well, early seed funding, and claims management. The name Clover, is that, did you come up with that?
Yes. This is what happens when you leave a mid-40s accountant and lawyer in charge of a brand. I necessarily relied upon my wife to help me, and it came about on a walk of our dog, whilst we were, I probably was bemoaning the fact that we didn't have a name yet, and we decided to workshop. I got asked the question, okay, give me the 60-second pitch,
yeah, right,
for what you do. And anyone who knows me, and there will be people I can hear laughing now as they listen to this, knows I can't do something in 60 seconds if it's better to do it in 10 minutes. So a 10-minute conversation ensued where we were talking about the four pillars. Yeah. And we ran through a number of different kind of constructs: quadrant, quad, and we just happened to walk across a grassy area and I saw a clover on the ground. It's got nothing, though, to do with luck. It's you know, the clover really had everything to do with the four quadrants and the four pillars. And, you know, the four-leaf clover is all about, you know, prosperity, and is all about the advancement of things to a prosperous outcome. And, you know, that's where we've got these four pillars to work with practitioners on that basis. So it became a lot deeper meaning than just walking the dog and seeing a clover on the ground in the midst of talking about, I think we were calling them the four quadrants then. They became, yeah, the four pillars later. The four pillars are things that at Clover we really believe in. You know, we really believe that there is an opportunity to work with practitioners and practitioners' lawyers across the whole life cycle of a liquidation and a claim. And that's what the pillars are about, and that's what the Clover's about. The life cycle of an insolvency job and an insolvency claim touch all of the pillars. So if a practitioner is coming to us, there might be a bespoke solution that means we hit one pillar. Utopia for me is that we're hitting all four pillars all the time. We start with some claims consulting. We move potentially into some seed funding. Then we, depending on the claim value, it might just be an adverse cost product offering that we offer, or it might be claims funding with adverse costs together. And the totality of the four-leaf clover is used, or the totality of the four pillars is used. I don't see their pillars, because on top of a pillar, you often place something. Well, on top of our four pillars, you can place your claim and you can run it the whole way to the end. So from that perspective, they work interlockingly. We'll do some that are individual, but I see them as an interlocking kind of ideal.
Yeah, I think it's important for the insolvency profession and the ability to make a difference in those claims 10, 15 below that? I mean, you would have your competitors reaching higher for class actions and other things these days. So it's a good support for the insolvency industry, and I think that's important, and that's that difference and edge that I think that the Clover will bring.
And I think it necessarily leads to the bespoking of solutions. I think with the experience that we've got, we can see what outcomes are going to arise, and we can see why it's really important to bespoke a solution that works. It's really important to bespoke a solution that incentivizes early resolution. You know, one of the things that I've seen over the course of my whole career is, and this is no criticism of any insolvency practitioner or any lawyer or any counsel, but these claims just seem to meander. And they often seem to meander, particularly after funding's been obtained, because suddenly there's money in the tin, and suddenly, the next step to resolve it's probably a mediation that's 18 months away, and we're going to work slavishly to that 18-month timeline. Well, using our experience, we absolutely work with practitioners around early exit, early resolution. And I should say here, not early for the sake of being early, early for the sake of it's the right outcome. So we have bespoke solutions already for practitioners that incentivize that, by reducing the premium payable to us. If things are settled early, if things are resolved within a spending range, that is a portion of the whole budget. And that's, again, an important way to work with practitioners. And it's an important way to make an offering that puts money in practitioners' pockets. You know, I can remember working on jobs back when I was an insolvency accountant, and you're in the fifth year or the sixth year of the job, and you're sending a report out to creditors to get your fees approved, or you're sending a report out to creditors to get a 477 2B approval. And 9 times out of 10, the creditors call up and say, "Why the hell are you sending this to me? That was 6 years ago. You're just bringing up all the negativity and I lost 50 grand.
Mm.
If you can get an early exit, if you can get into these things early, if we can put money in the pocket of liquidators early, and then we can support the liquidator through informal settlement processes, through mediation processes, to be able to exit early, that is something that in the sub 10 million, sub 15 million claim space, we can do really effectively and efficiently.
I think the end game is rewarding the creditor pool at the end of the day by being proactive, right? ASIC, the regulator's probably not or hasn't done enough in relation to asset administration funds, assetless administration funds, and or not providing enough funding to actually get to an end game. So if Clover can make a difference here, I think that... That'd be a big win for the insolvency profession.
Well, Neil, that's why I talk about we're not going to put arbitrary caps on. You know, I've never understood asking people to put in funding applications and the funding applications put in with a budget, and then the funding approval comes back after a couple of months of I was about to say navel gazing then, but a couple of months of rumination, and you get 20% of the budget. I don't understand that. I think if you're working, and it comes back to claim selection ideology, you know, if you're working with a good team and you trust your team, you've got to trust your team to tell you what it's going to cost. You've got to trust your team to give you what is a fair estimate, and you've got to trust your team to have done a good job in working out what are the things that need to be done and what are the things that, you know, potentially could be done but we shouldn't be budgeting for. This whole notion of, you know, I'll use some easy numbers. You need 100 grand and a funder, be they public or private, come back with, "Well, thanks for that, but we're going to give you 20. Well, I just don't understand. I've never understood that, and I don't see how that incentivizes a practitioner to do a good job. Like, our practitioners in this country do excellent work every day unfunded. I want to make that very, very clear. But I can think of nothing more deflating during my course of my career than putting in a request for funding or putting in a report to the regulator, for example, and you've worked really, really hard on it and you've done excellent work, and then you get back either, "No, we don't think there's anything here," when you clearly know there is,
yeah.
or you get back, yeah, thanks for that estimate.
There's plenty of that happening.
We're going to give you 1/15th of that.
Yeah.
And this gets us back to where we want to play. We want to play 10 to 15 million because in my experience, that's where the best cases are. In my experience, that is where some of the best insolvency work you are ever going to see is being done. And that is where supporting those practitioners doing that excellent work is both important for the profession. It's important for creditors and it's important. And, you know, it's important for us as a funder.
Well, congratulations on the fund again. I think it's going to make a massive point of difference to the insolvency market. Final question. Is Neil Cusson the best insolvency practitioner you've ever worked with?
Yes. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you again, Neil, for joining me today on the first episode of In Clover. If you'd like to find out more, you can visit our website, www.cloverriskfunding.com. Please subscribe. We'll have a new episode with some really interesting guests from the insolvency industry and maybe further afield shortly.